Good morning. Welcome back to the second hour of Focus 580, our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. The producers, Harriet Williamson, Martha Deal, Henry Frain, is at the controls. Next week, there's primary here in Illinois, and a lot of attention has been focused on the presidential races and both sides, the Republican and the Democratic side. There also are some area names on the ballot, and this week we've focused on a couple of these races. If you live in the 105th district in the Illinois House, there is a primary there. The current representative, Shane Cultra, is being challenged by Dave Tomlinson. He was here yesterday. He is president of the Champaign School Board, and he was here on the program. We like to give people the opportunity to talk with candidates, and glad to have him here yesterday. And this morning, we want to give you the same opportunity to talk with Shane Cultra. We'll ask some basic sorts of questions about state budget matters, but of course, for people who are listening, if there's some issue that is particularly important to you, well, this is your opportunity to call in and talk with a candidate yourself. Here in Champaign-Urbana, the number is 333-9455. Don't think we have anybody in Champaign-Urbana in the 105th, but if there are some folks who are listening this morning in the 105th, and that would be a long-distance call for you, well, you can just use our toll-free line, and that's 800-222-9455. Our guest was first elected to the General Assembly in 2002. Before that, he was a member of the Iroquois County Board for 14 years. He lives and grew up in Onarga. He went to Michigan State University, where he studied agricultural technology and landscape and nursery management, and for all of his life, really, has been involved in his family's business, the Onarga Nursery. And as I say, questions are certainly welcome. 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. Representative Cultra, hello.
Hello, David.
Thanks for talking with us.
Yeah, it's great to be on your program.
One of the things that the first thing I asked when Mr. Thompson was here yesterday was to give me a kind of a general take on the state. And I mentioned the fact that the two big speeches that the governor will give, the state of the state and the budget, are maybe about 3 weeks away. So we'll hear what he has to say. But if we gave you the opportunity to hear and to take a minute or two to do your own version of the state of the state, what would you say?
Well, I think looking at the future, we are going to be very short of money. I think this past year we ended with $1.7 billion in unpaid bills. It's just going to be tough crafting a budget that's fair and equitable to everyone in the state.
Do you see any possibility for any significant increase in revenue, in the money that you have to spend?
Well, I'm a little reluctant to vote for any tax increases when I feel like we aren't utilizing the funds that we have now in the best possible way that we could. I'm a Republican. I'm in the minority, and the Democrats might see that differently. But at this point, I really wouldn't look at increasing revenues.
Then let me ask you the other side there. If you take a look at at where the state is spending money, are there some things that you would say, here's a category where you might even say that would be I wish we could spend money on that, but the fact of the matter is that we don't have the money, and that this particular program or this particular area of spending, you would say, we're just going to have to cut that?
Well, I think the test of a government or civilization must be how we care for our children and how we care for our elderly, and I think that must be the test for this government also. And I want to emphasize that, because I don't want to be misunderstood when I say that this government, not Illinois, not the federal government, can provide everything that everybody wants. It's a responsibility of mine as an elected official to try to fairly and reasonably allocate limited funds to what is always unlimited demands.
Now,
you've got the baby boomers are going to be retiring. They are retiring. And when you look at long-term care, which 80% of people in nursing homes today are paid through Medicaid, which is a state insurance program. And with the baby boomers coming online, retiring, we can see probably a 30% increase in people in long-term care. So that's going to severely tax our Medicaid budget, and it's something that we have to do and we have to provide. But when we provide that extra money for Medicaid, that means there's less money for other areas, less money for schools, it's less money for any discretionary spending that the state has. So we've got some problems coming forward that we need to deal with.
Let me ask you a question that deals directly with the children side of this equation, and that's your assessment of the governor's program to provide health care for all children, essentially, in the state of Illinois.
Well, I think it's admirable that the governor would want to do this. The problem is that the state of Illinois was not properly funding the Medicaid program. They weren't paying our doctors, our pharmacists, before all kids. So to think that now we can branch out and expand health care when we aren't adequately funding what we're already providing is ludicrous. And I think it's a grand idea, but the state doesn't have the resources to provide this. I think it's something that the federal government's going to have to step in and help with, because the state can't do it by ourselves.
Well, you point to something that I know for healthcare providers in the state of Illinois has been a real serious problem, and that is the fact that the state can take a long time to pay its bills. And you have various kinds of providers. You have, for example, pharmacists who have had a lot of trouble with this. Is there something you think that the government or the legislature could do to at least make those payments more timely?
Well, I've signed on to a resolution asking for some short-term borrowing, and I mean, that's not a solution, but when you've got $1.7 billion in backlog payments due providers, you've got to do something. So I've signed on urging the controller to borrow some money and try to catch the payment cycle up. It's really a double whammy for hospitals and pharmacies, because first of all, the service that's provided, the state doesn't pay a lot according to what it really costs to provide that service. So say it costs a dollar to provide the service, the state maybe only pays 70% on that dollar. And then when you don't pay them for 3 or 4 months, they're caught two ways. And it's been very hard on local small hospitals, which I have in my district. Several times I've had to intervene and try to get payment speeded up just to keep hospitals with money to operate on. So it's a terrible problem, and to think that we would go and expand programs when we aren't paying the bills that we have just doesn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm. Well, it still seems that we have a pretty serious problem here with the costs that we have now and the kind of increases in costs that we might expect, particularly in the areas of Medicare, Medicaid. We have one of the most underfunded pension systems in the United States, so there's an issue of paying the retirement benefits of state workers. And I hear you say, and I'm sure that there are a lot of other members of the General Assembly that would say the same thing, that they would not favor an increase in taxes. But unless you do something to increase the revenues, then don't you really have to take a very hard look at where the state's spending money and find some way that you can cut spending?
Absolutely. I think we need to look at every program, every line item. I mean, there's things we've been funding for years. Maybe they're not necessary anymore. Maybe there's duplication of services in different offices that could be combined. No, we need to look seriously at every item in the budget and see whether it's necessary, see whether it can be reduced. And after we do that, if we're still short of money, then I would say then we have to look at increasing revenues.
Mm-hmm. Well, is there anything that stands out in your mind as being a program that's so expensive that you would say we can't just save money by being more efficient in that program, eliminating waste and so forth, that you might say that there it's some area where you would say we just have to do a major reduction in spending here in this line item of the budget? If I could, I would just take a pen and I would draw it through there.
Well, I can't really say no, I haven't done an investigation to say that I'd actually eliminate anything. But when you look at the health care and what a huge percentage of the budget is, I think that's a good place to start. Someone has suggested that maybe managed care would be a way to go, whether if you could get people to go to the doctor and have preventive care rather than having to pay when they go to the emergency room for something minor. That would be a way which you could save some money. So it's going to be a long process, and it's going to be an agonizing process, but it's one that we have to do, and we have to get the governor online, because really he's the one that crafts the budget, creates it, and he's going to have to to cooperate with the legislature in trying to make some reductions.
Our guest in this part of Focus 580 is Shane Cultra. He is a member of the Illinois House. He's a Republican. He represents the 105th District. Questions are certainly welcome if you'd like to call in, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. He was first elected to the House in 2002, this year in the Republican primary that takes place here in Illinois next week, he has a challenger. David Tomlinson is his name. He's the president of the Champaign School Board. He was here yesterday on the program to talk and take calls, and we're doing the same thing here this morning, offering the opportunity to both candidates, and we're glad he could be with us, give us some of his time. Questions are welcome. 333-9455. That's the Champaign-Urbana number. Toll-free 800-222-9455. We do have a caller here in Champaign County where we are on our line number one. Hello.
Hi. Your district, I wonder if you know how much of it is classified under the state category of medically underserved. And then I'm fairly certain I heard you say that you would think that looking to the federal government for help in medical doing something about medically underserved and underinsured, as where you stand on at the federal level, SCHIP would provide funds that would actually go right into kid care and all care, change the payments that you're talking about, the frequency. So, I mean, it's come up multiple times. Perhaps the Democrats are using it just to highlight the difference, et cetera. But I think it does indicate a great difference. And as you did say, that you thought that was one of the places federal tax dollars should come back to Illinois in. Have you lobbied in any event for the passage of SCHIP? And the other question is the general one about this medically underserved categorization, and I'll hang up and listen. Thanks.
All right. When you look at the 105th district, basically it's parts of six counties. Now, Champaign and Savoy, Mohammed area probably are, as far as being served by medical providers, they would be in much better position than the rest of the district. Once you move north, into Ford County, into Iroquois County, they would be, I would consider, underserved areas. The part of the 105th District in McLean County that this district represents would also be very, very underserved. So you have to look. I think McLean County would gravitate to Bloomington, where Ford County would probably go to Champaign. Iroquois County, we probably are split, probably go to Kankakee and to Champaign, maybe even some to Danville. But basically what I was thinking is, as far as the state trying to provide health coverage for everyone, I think it's something that the federal government has to provide. I think it, as you look at the debate, and I listened to the Democratic debate last night, and I think whoever the next president in whatever party, I think they're going to be looking at trying to get people without health care, get them online and get health care provided for them. And I think that's where it's got to come from. The state, by law, by constitution, has to be a balanced budget. The federal government, when we think they probably should have a balanced budget, you know, they print the money. They've got a lot more resources to provide this type of health care. And so I think we need to look to the federal government. SCHIP's a good program, but I don't think the state has the resources. I think it's something that we have to look to the federal government and for them to provide health care for people that do not have it. And that's where I think we have to go.
All right, let's talk again with another caller. This is also someone on line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm interested in what happens to the interest in various programs. I know that with delays in school fundings, millions of dollars of interest were at issue. I guess it's the same thing is true with health money, and I guess I'm wondering how... What happens to this interest money? And I'm wondering if it's these delays are actually built in for the state to use this money in other ways.
Well, that's a good question. First of all, if the state had provided like the money that it promised to the schools in a timely manner, they would have been able to put this money into different accounts before they needed it and draw interest on it. Because we delayed in making the payments, they lost that interest. As far as the state putting that money somewhere and making interest on it instead of paying the providers, they probably didn't have the money. Our cash flow is not very good, and it's not like the state's not paying the schools and putting the money somewhere else so that they can draw the interest. It's that they actually probably didn't have the money to make those payments. So when they didn't, the school district or whoever they owed the money to basically was loaning the money to the state, and and therefore they were losing the interest on the money they should have had.
Other questions, again, are welcome. 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. I'm not sure that probably any member of the General Assembly, Republican or Democrat, will be real eager to endorse a tax increase, and you said that you would not, that if it was necessary to deal with the unpaid bills, that you would rather see the state borrow money. To do at least on a short, you know, sort of as a short-term basis. So you wouldn't even if we could, we're talking about a temporary tax increase, one that would have a sunset, you wouldn't even favor something like that.
Well, when I say short-term borrowing, it's usual. I mean, the state has the ability to short-term borrow and pay bills, and that's something that we do almost every year, and the resolution that I was talking about was just urging the controller to go ahead and get some money borrowed to pay down this backlog of our Medicaid providers and different people that we owe. And then it would have to be repaid before the end of the fiscal year, the money that they would borrow now to repay these people. You know, I don't, as far as a temporary tax increase, I think it depends on what it is, and I think, first of all, as I said, we're going to have to look at all the programs to see if there's some places that we can save some money. The problem that I see with this administration over the last 5 years is we've had natural revenue growth without raising taxes. That means that the economy improves, people are paying more income taxes, or paying more sales taxes, and there's been some revenue growth. I think this particular year, they projected the natural revenue growth increased money to the state was going to be around $1.5 billion, but because the economy is slowing, it will only be at around $700 or $800 million. But every year that this over the last 5 years since I've been in office, there's been an increase in revenue. The problem is we have expanded programs and we've spent that money and more money besides. So if we would just held the line 5 years ago on our budget and didn't increase any line item, just paid for what we had the year before with no increases, we'd be in a lot better shape today, and we wouldn't be looking at needing short-term borrowing or tax increases.
Yesterday, when Mr. Tomlinson was here, we spent a fair amount of time talking about school funding, and his thought was that he would like to see the burden, the primary burden lifted from property tax, and that's mostly the way we fund schools, and see the mix of taxes shifted so that property owners would get some tax relief, and certainly he would not want to see any less money go to the schools, and I think a lot of people have said that, well, if you're going to do that, then what you're going to have to do is increase income taxes and use that to make up for what you're going to be losing on the property tax. And a lot of people have said, well, you can do this essentially by making it revenue neutral, and nobody's going to be paying more taxes, although some people seem to not be sure about whether that could actually happen. And the thing I observed yesterday was that this is something that we've been talking about here in Illinois for about as long as I can remember, that everybody says it's a great idea and that we should do it, but so far, at least for about 20 years now, it hasn't happened. What do you think we should be doing on school funding? And do you would you support some kind of a tax swap of that nature?
I'm actually working on a bill for a tax swap, and it's one of the reasons that I got into this position, is because I felt like property taxes were too high and the state wasn't living up to their part of the bargain. I think nationwide, when you look at the amount of money that this state puts into our school system compared to all the other states, we're about 49th or 50th in the country in the amount of money that our state government puts in to fund education. But when you look at our total funding, including our property tax, which is a local input into our schools, and add that with the portion that the state puts in, we're in the top 10 in spending for our schools. So what that tells you is that our local input property tax is too high proportionally than what it should be compared to all the other states in the nation. So when I look around in the rural areas of the 105th District, we don't have a lot of industry. We don't have a lot of new housing. It's fairly stagnant. And what that means then is the existing homes are paying a lot more money in property tax than what they should be. You look at people with fixed incomes in this district, because we love our schools and they're so important to us, we're taxing ourselves to death. Some older individuals, retirees, they're paying more for property tax than what they paid when they bought their home on the mortgage. So it's gotten totally out of hand, and we definitely need some kind of switch. And what I'm proposing, and I don't know that the bill ready to go forward this year, or it's something that may be may have to wait till next year. But I was proposing a $150,000 ceiling. Anyone that is owner occupied home would have the first $150,000 of their value of their home would be paid for through income tax or sales tax increase. So if your home was $300,000, the first $150,000 would be paid for taxes. And this is only through K through 12. It wouldn't have anything to do with farm ground. It wouldn't have anything to do for apartment houses. It's only for owner-occupied single-family dwellings. So if your home was worth $150,000 or less, you wouldn't pay any property tax on K through 12. And it would be paid, the school district wouldn't lose any money because the money would come from sales tax or property tax. I think it's important that we can't just do it all through income tax. We need to, I think we need to up the sales tax a little bit also.
Mm-hmm.
Because when anybody spends any money, they're paying the sales tax. There's probably a lot of people that have kids in school that don't pay income tax. Therefore, the only way for them to participate would be a sales tax. So I think you have to use a combination of both.
Just real quick, and I have a caller here. It seems to me that as this kind of thing has been discussed in the past, that that some people have been really skeptical of the idea that this could be revenue neutral, or at least in the sense they're saying, well, yes, so you're going to increase my other taxes. Maybe you're going to increase sales tax. You're going to increase income tax. And in return, what you're going to do is you're going to give me a break on my property taxes. So I should expect my property taxes to go down, but these other taxes that I pay are going to go up. And I think that the worry that a lot of people had was that that at the end of the day, somehow they would end up paying more. You know, they just quite didn't quite believe the idea that it was a straight swap and that they weren't going to end up paying more taxes and not less.
Well, I think you look at the bill that was Meeks had, Senate Bill 750, which was a property tax, income tax switch, and his bill wasn't revenue neutral. It raised a lot more income tax money than what it gave in property tax relief. Billions more. So I wasn't in support of that bill. Rick Winkle had a bill which I thought was much better, which raised a lot less money as far as income taxes compared to the property tax relief. The bill that I'm going to introduce is close, possibly or hopefully as you can get. The money, the increase in our income tax sales tax would be put in a like a lockbox and used only for education. It wouldn't be put into the general revenue fund where it could be used for something else. And the problem you have with any kind of switch is there are certain areas of the state where you know they have really nice schools because property taxes bring in a lot of money, so they're not too anxious to go to some other type of funding. In the rural districts of the 105th, you know, we're property tax poor. So there's got to be some way in this state to equalize the amount of money that different school districts have to spend on education. And by relying mostly on property tax, it's very unequal. So this bill could have some strange alliances. You might have people in the Cook County area that would be favor this bill, but you might have suburban Republicans where they like the way schools funding because they've got indoor swimming pools, indoor tracks, because they've got a lot of property tax. They may not be in favor of this because they could see this as a way of them losing money eventually. Mm.
Well, it seems to me in the past that indeed was where a lot of the opposition to this idea was coming. It was from it was from Republicans in the collar counties. I recall going back far enough that at the time when Pate Phillip was the Senate president, he's from DuPage County. He wouldn't even let this thing get out of committee, this kind of idea. He just stopped it dead in its tracks. And it seemed that indeed Republican opposition to this idea has always been very strong.
Well, and that's the reason, because they're very satisfied with the schools that they have and the amount of money that they had to operate on. So, as I said, this bill will have some strange coalitions. And when I say 150,000, that's just a starting figure. I really don't know exactly how much that will cost in income tax increase or sales tax increase. So it's something that I'm just proposing now. It may have to be a lower figure because maybe that'll be too big of an increase. But we'll just have to wait and see what happens.
Yeah. Our guest in this hour of Focus 580 is Shane Cultra. He represents the 105th District in the Illinois House. He is a Republican. He's been in the legislature since 2002. Before that, he served for a number of years on the Iroquois County Board. And he is going to have a challenger for the first time, I believe, in the primary next week when folks go to the polls to cast their ballots in the primary. There will be a race in the 105th District. His challenger is David Tomlinson. He is the president of the Champaign School Board. He was here on this program at this time yesterday, and we wanted to give you an opportunity, obviously, to talk with both candidates. In the past, there has been no Democrat to challenge in this district. So I think a lot of people think that this primary here is going to be the election. It's a pretty good chance that whoever wins will go on to be the representative in the 105th. So that's why we want to give some folks the opportunity to call in here and maybe ask some questions, talk with the candidate. So if you live in the 105th, even if you don't, you can call in 333-9455 and toll free 800-222-9455.
Maybe we should tell the viewers exactly where the 105th is.
You know, that would be a good, I think that would be a good idea because, you know, whenever we do shows like this, sometimes I think actually people are not sure what this, particularly when it comes to the Illinois House and Senate, they're not really quite sure what district they're in. So give us, just sketch out the territory of the 105th.
Well, it starts in Savoy. The southern part of the 105th district is Old Church Road. And it starts over on First Street and Old Church Road. And from there, it swings around to Duncan. Duncan runs along Parkland College. Anything west of Duncan in Champaign County would be in the 105th district. Once you go south on Duncan, you go to Kirby. Then you go east on Kirby to Sunrise, I think it is, or something. And then it goes south on to Broadmoor. So anything south of Broadmoor would be in the 105th district. It's a very gerrymandered district. I think it was designed by Mike Madigan to take some Republican votes out of the Champaign-Urbana area so they could elect a Democrat in Champaign-Urbana, and it worked to that effect. So from there, so it's really, if you look on the map, it's a very small peninsula that comes down into Champaign County along I-57 and picks up some of the southwestern portion of Champaign. It goes over to 600 Road in towards Mohammed, and that if you go over to Mohammed, there's a Dairy Queen out on 74. It's the road that runs right along the north and south along the Dairy Queen. That is as far west as I go there, and then it goes north for about 100 miles, clear to northern Livingston County to Dwight. I think there's 51 small towns in this district, with Hoopston and northern Vermilion County is actually the largest town, which has 6,000. So it encompasses Champaign County, eastern McLean County, eastern Livingston County. You've got all of Ford County. You've got southern Iroquois and northern Vermilion. So the east-west boundaries are the Indiana line in Iroquois. It goes about 65 miles over to Shenoah in McLean County, but not including Shenoah Township. So it's a huge district. Each district is divided up by population of approximately 105,000 residents makes a district. So if you've got a very a densely populated area, the district would be much smaller because there's so many small towns in the 105th district. It's very large.
All right. Well, we have someone who'd like to talk with you here and there in Urbana, line number one. Hello.
Yes. Would you comment on, I think it's Mr. Huckabee's idea that a national sales tax except on food, medicine, and essential services. It seems like an eminently good idea that people who assume more, who consume more or use more non-essential items should pay more.
Well, I think you know, when you look at it on the surface, I think it sounds like a good idea. And he's saying you get rid of the IRS because everybody, it didn't matter how much money you made, if you didn't spend it, you didn't pay any taxes on it. You'd only pay taxes when you spend it. And I think he was talking like 23%, or I don't remember exactly what the percentage was that you'd be paying in sales tax when you actually spent your money. The only problem I can see with it, maybe, you know, I haven't really looked in depth at his program. It seems like lower income people paying 23% on the money they spent would be a financial burden. But possibly he's got some way of dealing with that. I really don't know, but I think on the surface it doesn't sound like a bad idea, but the devil is always in the details.
Yes, and would you comment on this $150 per billion proposed rebate? Because when it was proposed, the dollar took a hit on international currencies because currency traders know that there's no money behind this proposal. I mean, there's no, it's going to be added onto the national debt. All our imported items are going to go up because our dollar's going to be worth less, and there's just going to be added interest that somebody must pay sometime.
Well, you're right. When the dollar value goes down, imports cost more, but the good portion of that is it's easier for us to export because our products cost less. So there's two sides to that coin. In this country, we love to buy foreign goods, and we get a lot of material imported from China. You're right. I mean, the fact that we accept paper dollars as money, I mean, that's just maybe blind faith, because maybe there isn't really anything to back up the currency that we do use. So I think a lot of the payments that the federal government makes might be on with borrowed money. So the $600 that they're planning on giving, or $1,200 possibly it is if it's a married couple, you know, that's probably money that they're going to be borrowing somewhere. I haven't really looked at the federal budget to know for sure, but will $600 help? You know, the people that a lot of people that get that $600 are going to spend it, and it's going to circulate around, and it can help but stimulate the economy a little bit.
Well, thank you.
All right. One of the things I want to ask you about here is one of the issues that has been there in Springfield, been a big issue just recently, and then going back to last year, was the funding for the CTA in Chicago for mass transit. And the concern was that CTA was having real serious budget issues and that they were talking about possibility for big fare hikes and also service cuts. And there was a deadline that was just narrowly avoided for that to happen. And I'm interested in, particularly as a downstate legislator, how you feel that all this was worked out, and what do you feel that downstate got, or did downstate in fact get anything in exchange for supporting mass transit in Chicago?
Well, first of all, mass transit, I feel, in Chicago is not efficiently run, and it's like a black hole. And I think for me, I mean, I'm a huge proponent of mass transit. I think our train systems, bus systems, we need to spend a lot of money. I think the federal government needs to emphasize this because they've got the money to do it more so than the state government. But I think as a state government, we also need to push it because it's so much more efficient rather than having people drive around and going places in cars. We need to be using the trains more. We need to be using the buses, and I think it's something. You go to Europe and you realize the trains and the buses that they use and how they operate. It makes this country pale in comparison. They're so far ahead of us. There's a time coming. We're fossil fuel is limited, and we need to get on board and beef up our mass transit system to haul more people, make it available so people will want to use it. So I'm a big proponent of mass transit, but the problem with the Chicago mass transit system is I think the people that ride the system should pay for the operations of it. And the problem with Chicago is they're not even getting 50% of their operating budget from the fare boxes. So it tells you right offhand that there needs to be a fare increase. And the first proposal that came through, it wasn't going to raise the fares to 50% of operating costs for 10 years. The proposal that did pass, they have 5 years to do that. But still, it's not acceptable for me to 5 years, the people that are writing the system are only paying for half of what it costs to operate the system. And then you look at what it's going to cost as far as infrastructure needs for mass transit, and that's one of the reasons I voted no against it. I felt like there needed to be a statewide construction program because mass transit is going to need new rails, they need brakes, they need wheels on the trains. They've got so many needs that just paying for someone to drive the train is not enough. You know, it has to be tied with infrastructure improvements to keep those trains running. So I think we're going to see mass transit is going to come back in the summer and saying, hey, you know, we can pay for the driver now, but the train's broke down and we don't have any money to fix it, or the track needs to be fixed. And so I think it's not operated properly up there. They've been fiscally irresponsible in how they've run mass transit up there. We just can't keep sending more money and more money without having some reform in pensions, reform in salaries, and it's a mess up there.
Well, just generally, so though you would say that mass transit, say mass transit at Cook County, that it's important enough to keep that running that you think that the state of Illinois should be putting money into that system?
Well, I think the state of Illinois needs to be putting money in all mass transit systems everywhere. I think we need to, you know, if we have to, if we don't have any money, maybe we need to put a few cents on gas tax or something and use that for mass transit, because that's how important I feel mass transit is. I mean, we need to beef up our trains. We need more Amtrak. Because that's the wave of the future, is mass transit. But it has to be done and run in an efficient manner. And I just don't feel like the Chicago transit system is a black hole up there. They just aren't managing the thing properly, and that's the problem I have with it. No, I think the state needs to definitely invest in mass transit. But I think the people that ride the transit system, their fares ought to at least cover the operating part, and then the state would help with the infrastructure part of it.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk with another caller here, someone in Champaign. It's line one. Hello.
Hello. I'm probably going to be considered a heretic if what I'm going to say. I'm a taxpayer, and I am Joanna Sir's retirement pension, so that may color a little bit of what I'm saying. But anyway, I do believe the state of Illinois is in a financial mess in terms of K through 12 funding, health care funding. I do believe we should look closely at universal health care, and I know people are going to say we can't pay for it. I think Chicago Transit, if you look at what Chicago gives the rest of the state, I think more money comes out of Chicago to downstate than otherwise. So I really get tired of this dichotomy between Chicago, one of the great cities of the world, and downstate. I think we're all in this boat together. But my question is, I read an article that said Illinois' financial mess is not so much a function of Illinois' legislature spending like drunken sailors as much as it is that we don't have an adequate revenue stream. And therefore, I've lived in three different states, and I've never seen a state that had an income tax of no more than 3%, and it was a flat tax as opposed to a progressive tax. What is your feeling about maybe doing what Senator Frerichs wants to do, a progressive income tax, and maybe raising that tax from, say, this, in my opinion, meager 3%?
Well, that's interesting, and I would probably have to do some studying on that really before I wanted to make an opinion on the progressive tax. But when you look at the Illinois spending, I think if you just go back about 15 years in the Illinois, maybe 12 years, the Illinois budget was around $30 billion. Today it's over $50 billion. So there's been a huge increase in revenue, but we've spent every dime of it and more. So to say that you know, we're not taking in enough money, I question that. I think we're taking in a lot of money. The problem is we haven't been fiscally responsible, and for every dime we've taken in, we've spent 11 cents. Or we just need to get a handle on spending.
What are your feelings about raising the income tax from, say, this flat tax 3%?
Well, that probably has some merit, but it's something that I really haven't studied a lot, and I don't really want to make an opinion on that today. But it has enough merit that I would certainly look at it.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Something that I want to make sure that we talk at least a couple minutes about, and we have maybe 3-4 minutes left, is ag policy, since in the district, in 105th, I expect that the big industry is going to be agriculture. What sorts of things do you think that the legislature should be doing, state government should be doing for farmers?
Well, I think get off their backs and leave them alone is what I would say. In my area, we're not looking for something from the state government. We're just looking for state government to let us do our job, go to work, and keep them out of our pocket. I think one thing that would really devastate ag in the state of Illinois is something like the gross receipts tax, putting taxes on farm inputs like taxing seed, fertilizer. That would put our farmers at a disadvantage to all the farmers in surrounding states when they have no control over the price at which they're selling their product. So I think state government has a potential of harming our ag industry a lot more than what the ag industry is looking for help. I think they would be satisfied if we just left them alone.
Well, are there those specific things that you would say maybe that the state could be doing, putting either more money into research, things that would increase productivity, things that would perhaps increase markets, that where you'd say, yes, actually by the state spending money, you could actually do something for farmers?
Well, there's no doubt, and you just have to look at CIFAR there in the research park in Champaign. When this governor took over, we had a $16 billion budget, and that in turn, that $16 million, they turned that over and generated another $150 million in additional money that came in for research. The first thing this governor did, he proposed a zero budget for CIFAR, and how short-sighted is that? Eventually, we got him to put some money back into it, but I think even today, CIFAR is only at a $5 million budget and critically underfunded. And it's our link here in Illinois, the University of Illinois, and the Ag come together for research that will help the whole Ag segment. And it's something that we've been very short-sighted in the Blagojevich administration.
We have, I think, I'm going to try and get one more caller here real quick. No, I guess not. Well, let me ask about one other thing, and that is your proposal for some limits on campaign spending, something that it's a lot of things that one of those things that people say, yeah, that's a great idea, except getting support for it, that's tough. What is it you have in mind?
Well, the problem that I see in Springfield in the 5 years that I've been down there is special interests, and it's the Speaker and the President of the Senate controlling their members on how they vote, and I think the way they do that is that they control all the purse strings on re-election. When it costs $1 million or whatever that Senator Farrick spent over $1 million in his re-election, I think 800,000 of that came from Emil Jones, and so in Naomi Jacobson, she had some tough races, and a lot of her money came from Mike Madigan. So what we need to do is sever those purse strings. And I think if we went to a system where you could only spend $25,000, it doesn't matter where the money came from, I think any representative could go out and raise that kind of money without having to be holding to any particular special interest group that would lobby for you to vote in a way that you really wouldn't want to vote. And also, it would free you up from the Speaker being able to have his finger on you, because you could raise the money independent of him, and you could be more independent in the way you voted.
It seems that that's a tough sell. I would expect that it wouldn't matter whether you were a Republican or a Democrat. The reality of campaigning these days, I think it would make it difficult to find enough people who would be willing to agree to something like that.
Well, the problem is I think there's a lot of could be a lot of broad-based support in the legislature itself for that, but the people in control aren't ever going to let it out to be voted on. Because they'd be giving up how they have their power base.
We're just about at the point we got to finish up. Any last thing that you might like to mention?
Well, I just want to say that living in a small town in the 105th district is kind of a unique experience, and I feel like a small town is the heart and moral soul of America. Where family and country still mean something, where you can feel the presence of God out in the fields. I think it's an honor for me to be able to serve a district composed of small towns and farms and a great university like the University of Illinois.
Well, I appreciate you giving some of your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our guest here has been Shane Cultra. He's representative in the Illinois House in the 105th District. He is a Republican. He's been in the House since 2002. Before that, for a number of years, was a member of the Iroquois County Board. And next week in the Republican primary, folks who live in 105th will be choosing between two candidates, Shane Cultra and his challenger, David Tomlinson. He was here yesterday. Dave Tomlinson is president of the Champaign School Board. One or the other of them will go on to be the Republican candidate. In the past, there's been no Democrat running in the 105th. So a lot of people say, indeed, what we have here, the primary, this is the election. And in that sense, that whoever wins, they will go on to represent the 105th in the General Assembly. And if you did not hear yesterday's show with David Tomlinson and you would like to, that's on our web archive. Just go to will.illinois.edu, and it will tell you everything you need to know about listening to that show.